104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. You guys want to do 3 or 4 hours today? It's our choice.
Let's go ahead and do four.
Four?
Four and a half.
We'll do four. Tori Holt coming up at 12:15. Looking forward to that. Chatty is a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. Paul will be in the selection meeting on January 19th. Is that right, Paul?
Yes,
next Tuesday?
Tuesday already.
And, yeah, so he's one of the three receivers in the room, and we will chat with Tori Holt about that and much more about his career.
Leaving you guys behind on Tuesday while I go talk about Tori and a bunch of other people.
You know, at least for your sake, a couple of these conversations should be historically quick.
Hey, counting on my internet. Comcast, Tuesday, let's make it work, all right?
Needing that internet for sure. Hey, the hiring thaw at Tennessee continues. What was a hiring freeze has now completely gone away, and they've hired another coach today. Tennessee has hired assistant strength coach. I'm pulling up the first name. Rhett Brooks, son of Dan Brooks, longtime assistant coach for Philip Fulmer in Knoxville, is the new assistant strength coach. After losing a guy to South Carolina, they hire Rhett Brooks today.
Congratulations.
So more hires continue to take place. I'm also told that Jeremy Pruitt is meeting with the NCAA, not the NCAA, meeting with University General Counsel and the law firm out of Kansas City, Glazer. They're meeting today. That's the latest on the investigation.
To interview or to meet to discuss the findings? Do we know?
Meeting to discuss what they have.
Okay.
And this has been talked about in other circles. I don't think any of this is going to be good for Brian Niedermeyer, the assistant coach at Tennessee. I don't know right now if it extends.
Well, he was known as the recruiting guru, right?
Yes. When you see recruiting guru in the SEC,
you know
a lot of different things pop up. Usually it's a
bag full of cash.
Dollar signals over the head. I do not think that this is a bags of cash type scenario that Tennessee has been caught with in any way. I'd also like to point out that the two players that are being investigated both signed with Georgia. And Georgia is now reportedly investigating as well. I would also like to report out that Brian Niedermeyer was hired from Alabama.
So he learned well?
Where he had a similar role of recruiting guru. Gee, I wonder.
So
these things happen, people.
Urban Meyer is apparently finalizing the contract with Jacksonville to become the Jags' new head coach. So we were discussing earlier in the show the direction of that franchise. Paul, you don't think it works out because of the college background going to the pro control aspect of it. But they have a lot of young, talented players. They're going to have the number one overall pick. Many, and we all expect it to be Trevor Lawrence. They have another first-round pick. After that, they have two second-round picks. They hold 11 draft picks overall, and they have among the best cap situation of any team entering the offseason. So there's a lot of work and a lot of overhaul that can be done to that roster.
And we've seen things happen relatively quickly for some teams who've gotten good faster than you expected. The Rams, when McVay took over.
Yeah, there you go.
Being an example. Now, they didn't come quite as far back. They didn't have quite as big a hole to dig out of. But things happen in the league faster than they used to for teams getting bad, too. I mean, the pendulum swings at a faster pace.
And you don't, I mean, it just, you also have to get into a situation where you know exactly how much time you have. Look at Doug Peterson the past 4 years with the Eagles, Super Bowl, and then they've regressed from that point, but he's fired, right? They see there's a parting of ways over the direction of the quarterback position.
They got a statue in the parking lot of Doug Peterson. He just got fired.
Meanwhile, John Gruden is the only head coach in the NFL to miss the playoffs the last three seasons and keep his job.
He's making $10 million a year.
And he's in a comfy spot. Mark Davis is paying him $10 million a year over 10 years, a $100 million contract. And, I mean, that they're getting nothing in return on that to this point. But there's no threat of him losing his job.
Yeah, and the other thing, talking about the quick thing, quarterbacks come in and play well fast now. It used to be very hard for a rookie quarterback to do things, and we just saw it happen in Los Angeles. We just saw it happen in Cincinnati before Burrow got hurt. It's not that big a deal anymore for a rookie quarterback to come in and be a substantial part of an effective offense right away. And year two, you're really expecting things, right? What do we expect out of Herbert next year? I mean,
continued good play.
Yeah, why is Los Angeles an attractive job right now?
As the quarterback.
Right? And he was terrific. Terrific. Not
quarterback,
like,
but they're
not
also
like kind of good, like, oh, there's a chance there. Like, you think that guy is going to be a legitimate quarterback unless the wheels fall off somehow.
Right. And then if you have the ability to go upgrade your roster in free agency the way Jacksonville does, you can turn around things quickly.
And Jacksonville's the one that there's nowhere to go but up. They have so much draft capital. They've got good young talent at some spots, and they're about to add possibly a once every decade type quarterback. That's their number one for them.
You certainly expect him to be one of these rookie quarterbacks who comes in and is not swimming as a rookie, is able to do some things. You know, you have to simplify things, and you have to protect him, and you have to
I expect his baseline to be Andrew Luck. That's my expectation for Trevor Lawrence.
Well, we've been talking about him.
Baseline.
That's a pretty good baseline.
We've been talking about him just like we talked about Andrew Luck.
That's a pretty good baseline. Not many guys come around that is a no-brainer. This guy is a franchise quarterback,
right?
Number one pick. Hell, Peyton Manning was debated between him and Ryan Leaf, and he was the guy for the Colts before Andrew Luck that became that guy.
615-737-1045, our number. Crazy trade in the NBA yesterday. We knew James Harden wanted out. It was discussed at length across the national media. But then you get the results of the trade, and it's so, Paul, you pointed this out, and you're right. It's just so difficult to follow these trades across the association. We'll discuss that. Plus, the Preds dropped the puck on their season tonight, 56-game season across the NHL this year. And are we setting up, are we ready for a bad season from the Nashville Predators? I'm not trying to be negative, just realist here.
Just so negative.
Trying to be a realist, and what I see when I saw the roster released, and the questions I have about it. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Maybe it's just me. I feel like ESPN is stuffing the NBA in our face more this year than they ever have before.
They're also treating, by the way, I love the old school Hornets jerseys they broke out, like the old 90s Larry Johnson, Muggsy Bogues jerseys they're wearing.
Grandmama.
They are, yes. I had a Grandmama poster back in the day. The NBA is trying to sell everyone on how great and entertaining a player forcing a trade when he got fat is for the league.
This league.
Look at this league. Oh, my goodness. What a league we're in. I'm thinking, this is not a positive for the marketing of your league.
I looked at several tweets about the trade. I can't understand it. There were NBA people sending out GIFs like with cartography stuff
about Galifianakis with all the algorithms
about how difficult it is to figure it out, and they were using, and I understand I'm not hip to the lingo of the NBA these days, but they had like three letter initials on the on what the first round picks are that I don't even know what they mean.
The best thing to come out of this trade.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
NFR first round picks. I guess it means some level of protection or whatever. When it's so complicated, when there's a monstrous trade made in your league, that should interest me because it's one, yeah. It's a team in my home market that could conceivably garner my interest now.
Right.
That I give up on reading the trade because I can't understand it because it's like Greek. That's not good for you.
I just don't believe people love this league. I just don't believe it when I hear it.
I constantly don't believe it. I think they're fighting.
I like the playoffs. Like, when they get to the playoffs, I'm going to watch the Brooklyn Nets with that dynamic. And sure, it's entertaining to follow the drama and all of that. Like, it's entertaining to follow the Real Housewives. We like drama. I mean, that's fun. So the drama of this is fun. The best thing to come out of this, though, was the all of the different memes and GIFs and videos of the reaction of Brooklyn strippers to James Harden coming to town because of his love of strip clubs. And the best one I saw was someone put, these are Brooklyn strippers handing over their G-strings with the news of James Harden coming to town. And it was the scene from Rudy where all the players are turning over their jerseys for Rudy, one after the other coming through the door, just solemnly turning over the jerseys. It was... That's the best thing to come out of all of this.
I just also...
That and fat James Harden.
So, all the different fat James Harden references. Time and time again about the player control in the NBA.
How quickly will he drop those pounds?
And is he in the sauna right now? I don't...
Did you like what I sent you guys of Chris Pratt?
Yes.
Of Rockets
yes.
Harden, and it was him fat on the beach, and then Brooklyn Harden, it was him just ripped.
Captain America. Movie. Yeah.
So, look, I'll agree. Like, NFL owners have too much control. But I would argue the NBA, it's too much the other way. You've talked forever about players controlling who the coach is and just disobeying coaches outright and all of that. I don't like that. And here's a guy that basically just didn't abide by anything and put on, what, 40 pounds? 30 pounds? to get his way out. And
ultimately, a strip club buffet.
And ultimately, he wins. So, and people seem to kind of like it. So is that where we are? Like, yeah, man, they're not doing what you say, so you put on 40 pounds and you got your way out. You showed them. You showed them, man. You win. Do we like that?
I don't.
I don't like that. Why do people like that?
I like the drama that ensues.
Yeah, but it's like the
Housewives. I like the Marvel.
Shows.
I like the novelty act of what the Nets will look and play like with these three personalities.
After the fact, but not this game.
It's not
out.
A good thing
it's,
for
it's
your
like
league.
It's like a housewife's show. It's not a sports league.
Well, they're having to come up with ways to try to make people interested in regular season NBA is the problem. And these are things that they think now people are going to tune in and watch the next Brooklyn Nets game on ESPN or
also,
TNT, and they're not.
Well, how many minutes can he play at this rate? At this rate and at this weight.
At this weight.
What's his fitness level?
How about... Just to look at a different angle of this, the city of Houston and how quickly it has turned into a bleep show for sports. You have the Houston Astros, who are cheaters, that are signaling in and banging drums on what pitch is coming. You have the Rockets, who prior to yesterday fired their general manager because their general manager disagreed with the NBA stance on China. On China.
Who is an excellent general manager,
and
right? A cutting-edge general manager.
Yeah, facilitated the trade to get Harden, paired him with Westbrook. I mean, did a lot of solid things for Houston and that organization, and they fire him because he denounced China, and the league didn't agree with that. And, you know, they whitewash him. And then you have the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson doesn't want to play for them anymore. He wants out.
And Jack Easterby is...
So you have those three professional teams that no one wants to be a part of.
How are the Dynamo right now?
You tell me. I wouldn't know.
I don't know either. They have a nice area near their stadium, which is near Minute Maid Park.
We University of Houston has a great basketball team.
There you go.
That going for them.
They've got that. Kelvin Sampson is his face is all over that city, by the way. Last time I was there for the Titans-Texans game.
Is Vince Young living there again?
Speaking of fat.
Positive or negative for the city?
Vince Young is fat.
Well, he's got that. Does he still have the steakhouse?
I don't know. I
can't imagine that. He is a chunk. Bankrupt.
Speaking of Lindell.
Who's heavier, Vince Young or Harden?
VY. That's really? My guess.
I'm going Harden. VY carries it a lot in the face.
Oh, is that the problem?
Well, I haven't seen a full body. I haven't seen a full body shot. To be fair to VY, I haven't seen a full body shot.
Well, yeah, and unfortunate for Harden that we see him in a layup line.
Yeah. We've definitely seen a full body shot of Harden.
So the have you seen the image that people are tweeting out? I saw it last night. I can't remember what NBA site I was looking at, but it has Durant, Kyrie Irving, and it has Mark Henry, the WWE wrestler, posing as as Harden. See it?
That so, guy's build is like a cartoon. You know how the cartoon villain is always like.
So Mark Henry,
he's got a teeny tiny waist, but he's huge shoulders.
He's a legitimate lifter for the Olympics that is now in WWE, and he's
is that guy funny?
He looks an older guy now. Funny. Yeah, I think he is. But yeah, he's an older guy.
Was he a guest on Squared Circle Radio back in the day?
Reed actually bought a jacket that looks similar to the jacket he wore in his prime.
I want to hear that dude talk.
Your thoughts on Mark Henry, Reed? How would you classify him?
When I saw that photo of him and Irvin and Durant, I thought that is about as close as you're going to get nowadays. But every time I look at Mark Henry, all I hear is somebody's about to get their wig split.
That's too muscular for Harden, though, right now. Harden's covered in layers of fat, not muscle.
Oh,
Harden's not been in the gym.
So good. Will the Preds be good? They dropped the puck on the season.
You tell
tonight.
Me, buddy. You tell
Reed,
me.
Reed, the season ticket holder.
Yeah.
Look.
What's the status of those season tickets, Reed? What did I tell you?
Who really knows?
Again, I'm not trying to automatically denounce the Preds as a bad team, but I'm going through their roster yesterday, trying to look ahead to their 56-game season. And yeah, I think we could say a bad season, where the Preds lost a lot of scoring from last year's team with Smith and Bonino, Turris. Granlin is having visa issues due to COVID traveling, so he's not back with the team. He finished among the top there. The team finished 16th in goals per game last season. And I think they're far likely to see a decline in that area where they averaged a little over 3 goals per game. Bonino and Smith were second on the team with 18 goals each. Granlund was one behind them with 17 goals. And then Roman Josi had a career year, and it's unlikely we see that same type of performance and pace, although I guess it's likely. Where is the scoring coming from with this group?
I have zero expectations, really. And I don't know if that has to do with the shortened season or if me not being able to get in the building is cutting into my enthusiasm. But I just look at that top line, and I think that's where all the scoring is going to have to come from. And we've seen that before where that top line does – well, I mean, I was excited coming into the season. 3 weeks ago, I was excited because Victor Arvidsson said he was as healthy as he's been in years. Yeah. And then he misses 2 days of practice, and he's allegedly he was skating with the first line today, but now I don't think he's at 100%. So that just leaves Forsberg and Johansson to carry the load on that first line.
I think we're headed towards a boring style of hockey for them to grind out games. A style that requires them to play tough and physical. They're a pain in the butt to play against night in and night out. And can they have these 3-1 scores, a two nothing score for a win? I don't know. We have not seen the wholesale youth movement either with their roster. So that would add some excitement level to their play, but we haven't seen them go full in on that. And the question remains, do we see goaltending that's adequate? I mean, that might sound like an easy go-to as a key to the season for any team. But
Saros didn't prove he's the guy, and
we've not gone. We haven't gone into a season with the Predators where we've had to ask that question. If you think about what the expectations have been, will they get good goaltending? But after what we saw last season, that is a massive question. The Joffelin read plus Duchesne. That's where the production has to come from. Can those four meet or exceed expectations? Because, you know, if you just divvy it up, could you say it's likely going to take 80 goals from that group to make the postseason?
Oh, I had more than that, man.
That group last year had 63.
Yeah.
That's a big ad. And look, I'm into the psyche question. I mean, do they really come back believing what they were saying at the end of the loss to the Coyotes?
There's no
Coyotes.
Way.
That it was puck luck, that they're the better team, that, you know,
if they
were perfectly
that,
fine with all of that stuff. Do they go away and come back believing that they are who they thought they were, or do they come back believing who the results said they were? Those are big differences there.
Well, the main guy who was talking about the puck luck and trying to downplay a lot of it, and your little bobblehead friend that's there next to you, Matt Duchesne, now saying that he had a broken jaw during that series and just didn't feel like himself. Why didn't you say that a long time ago? I don't understand the reluctance. We know hockey players are tough.
As soon as it's over, there's something.
Yes, if there was something, we're just now hearing this. How many months later? I don't get that. And I know a scrimmage is a scrimmage, but when they had their first scrimmage last week, there were 10 goals scored. The blue team beat the gold team 8-2. That doesn't bode well when you're not stopping when the players that you're most familiar with, you're not stopping their goals. You gave up 8 goals between the two goaltenders. That's not a good sign.
I want to know about the psyche, and I want to hear what they have to say as things begin to unfold. I want a different attitude than I saw and heard from that team after the COVID stoppage. And I think that's an important thing here. And for a still relatively new coach who's had his first, off season, for what an off season's worth, given the circumstances, to instill those things out of the camp that they have had.
I just go look for the path to success as I just view their roster versus last year, this year. Philip Forsberg needs somewhere between 25 to 28 goals. Arvidsson needs somewhere 20 to 24. Duchesne and Johansson, can they give you 15 to 20 goals on this 56-game season?
And they need some health luck.
Well, health luck.
They need a
rejuvenated energy with the guys they brought in, who I admit I know nothing about. I'm going to learn more about them tonight. But the guys like Brad Richardson and Nick Cousins and Matt Benning, and these guys really don't know. I mean, you're going to have 6 Preds make debuts tonight that I don't think anybody around – the team could just list off. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of turnover. It's a new look group. You're still counting on the big four.
And you got
who
one
have not
great,
come up in a consistent fashion.
And you
for
got
you.
One great spark plug in Arvidsson.
When he's healthy,
right?
To what
when he's not out there,
yeah.
Who's,
I love the guy,
who's doing
but,
that?
Right? Can you count on him for 56 games? I don't think so.
Well, but when he's not out there, who's playing that kind of role?
Where's your energy?
Giving you that juice.
Rocco Grimaldi, and he's nowhere near the goal scorer that Arvidsson
what
can be.
Yeah.
Also, where is Elli Tolvanen? He's on the taxi squad.
Where he is overhyped a couple years ago.
He's on the taxi squad. David Poile came on here a couple years ago and said he's getting all kinds of calls to trade, or people wanting to trade for him, and they wouldn't budge on the future.
Should have budged.
Well, hindsight's 20/20, but the guy hasn't even been on a roster. But I mean, he's not even close to – And I know John Hines on the presser yesterday was saying, don't view it as like regular
right, they're saying
current
it's all
roster
the same.
Taxi squad. You're going to see all these guys move around quite a bit this season. And that might be the way things go during the COVID year. But I can't help but read between the lines on the fact that he's not on the opening night roster.
Yeah, I would have thought by this point, instead of some of those guys they went out and got in off-season and free agency moves, I thought that at this point where he was at, and maybe last season's interruption kind of played a factor in that, but I would have thought by now he would have found his way at least on back into that roster to where he's at least here in Nashville for a significant amount of time during the season, but that doesn't appear. And I go back to what you said. There was times last year it was Nick Bonino carrying this team. He was the one who was scoring the goals, and I look at this roster and I don't – it's going to have to come from one of the – based on what we saw last season, it's going to have to come from one of these new faces to pick up that slack that Bonino, you lose with Bonino, and I just don't know if those guys are that type of player or if they're going to be able to mesh quick enough and have enough ice time together to do that.
Are we past the point of figuring out that Forsberg can be a superstar in the league? Like I see some highlight reel moments from him, and then I see, you know,
I see yes
flashes, because flashes where he's great, and then the trend is he tails off some.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the superstars in the league; they're the ones who are scoring 50, 60 goals a season. Yeah. And as talented as he is,
he's got the talent. Like he's the guy not
that consistent.
He's
goal
the player
scorer,
I would point to
reason.
That can elevate everything.
He does things with a puck that you can't. Most men can't not do, but he just cannot consistently score goals. Finish.
Let's go back to the goaltending for a second, Reed. What's your expectation?
My expectation is they're going to go with Soros, and it's going to be an up-and-down season. I'm not convinced UC Soros is the number one goaltender in this league.
They're going to rotate like they did last year.
And I'm not convinced that Pekka is – I mean, look, he's gotten some rest. He's healthy. But is that the thing that we're holding him back? Is that why we saw the decline? I don't think it is. I just think it's the guy getting older, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not optimistic. Like, I keep trying to talk myself back into it the way I have the last three seasons.
But you know what?
The optimism of the season starting, and I can't do it.
I haven't heard the optimism about this team.
If they're bad, how much does the interest wane?
I had this conversation with a friend of mine who is a massive,
especially if you're not going
NHL fan and
TV ratings.
See, I'm of the opinion that as soon as things open back up in sports, it doesn't matter how your team's doing.
Yeah, people
are going to be there. The place will be
electric.
That's
the case with everything.
And then you catch fire again. Like, you're back.
That's the case with everything. Shows.
I mean, it was March 5th, I think. March 5th of last year was the last time they played a game at Bridgestone Arena as an organization. I mean, that. A packed house is in the future. I don't know if it's happening this season because it's a 56-game season. I don't know how they're going to there's no plan, I know, for a packed Bridgestone Arena.
No. They're going at some point, they're going to start selling pods of tickets.
Right.
At some point. And my lack of optimism, if they were to call me right now and be like, hey, we can get you in the building tonight, I would be there.
Of course.
But I think that lack of optimism.
How much is that is Preds and how much is that is going and doing something?
I think it's Preds.
Yeah.
I mean, my lifestyle really hasn't changed that much.
Right.
I've just honestly been waiting around for hockey season. That's the only time I really do anything around here.
But, I mean, it's a good question, Paul, because, you know, the last time that you're fully invested in the quote-unquote normal sports calendar, they were really good and high expectations. And since then, you know, you've got, at the time it was an interim head coach. Now you've got the full-time head coach. You have no fans in the arena, what, 400, something like that?
Yeah, 400.
And lower expectations based on the way the rosters had to be revamped because of the way they bat out in the postseason.
Yeah, I think they benefit, like you're saying, from once you can get more and more in that building, a combination of the diehard Predators fan and the eagerness to go do something. Sporting or whatever wise, they're going to benefit from that. But if you flipped a switch and things were all back to normal, or this never happened, would the interest wane with them being poor? For some people, it would have to.
Well, some people have to consider, do I pay the high price for tickets? Because the league, now I'm not just discussing the Preds, the league is going to have to raise ticket prices to make up some of the money that has been lost to stay afloat.
And we've been talking about this for a while. We've got to dig into the finances of what's going on.
When we see the finance issues with Canadian teams.
Who can't pay their hotel bills from last January.
Yeah, they.
It's remarkable what the Preds have been able to pull off because, to my knowledge, they have not furloughed anyone. They didn't lay anyone off. We're business as usual, to my knowledge.
Yeah, I do.
I haven't checked on that in a few months.
There have been some account reps that have turned over, and I don't know if I think that was just on their own initiative. People left, but the latest information that we got whether you opt in to buy these pods this season and get into games when you can, or if you're just rolling everything over to the next season, they've promised not to raise season ticket prices up and through the next, not this season, but the next season.
To jump in now, you're saying?
No, whatever you're paying this year, you'll also pay the next season.
As long as you continue your payment.
Right.
But yeah. Those had gone up.
Which they also suspended.
Like, previously.
They've not taken out season ticket fees since October.
Good for them.
And two of those payments, they completely just dismissed. You'll never make those payments at all. Everything else has been suspended until they get a handle on what the attendance is going to be. And keep in mind, too, the game is going to be on Fox Sports Tennessee tonight, but YouTube TV, Hulu Live, and Sling no longer carries any of the Sinclair regional networks. So that not only is that less money for the franchise, it's also less opportunity for you to catch the Predators if you use a streaming
service.
There is
going to be a lot of people upset about that. Yeah, I guarantee there are people assuming that they're going to be able to find it.
Just watch them the way they watched them before.
And Sinclair made that Fox Sports Network purchase last year, start of last year, or late 2019?
I believe so. And YouTube and Sling and Hulu were just, they got to the point where they said, you're asking way too much for these rights. We're just not going to do it.
That could be an issue.
And with regard to those ticket prices, it's good that they're doing what they're doing now.
Yeah.
We had the discussion of where they went over the last several years off of previous successes.
615-737-1045, our number. Coming up, we continue the NFL discussion. If you'd like to jump in and chat about the offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith interviewing, we can discuss Titans defense, look around the league a bit. Some thoughts on the divisional matchups as well. We'll run through it. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Torrey Holt, Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. He'll join us today at 12:15. Looking forward to that conversation. We welcome your phone calls. 615-737-1045. 737-1045 if you would like to join us with Paul Koharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Should mention Chad Withrow attending a funeral service for a member of his family this afternoon. So he left around 11:30. He will be back with us tomorrow. Condolences to the Withrow family.
Absolutely.
We go to Joey first up this segment. Hey, Joey.
Hey, guys. So, you know, talking about the OC and the DC for the Titans, and, you know, two names that I know, one of them for the DC, you know, he just lost the head coaching job. But why not bring in Matt Patricia and Jim Bob Cooter as our offensive and defensive coordinators?
Jim Bob's pretty local.
Pretty local.
Pretty local.
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Well, I haven't heard his name since you shouted it when we saw him on Pedal Tavern. He was walking around the gulch, and Paul was like, Jim Bob! Jim Bob!
I just want to get him to turn his head to acknowledge that we recognized him. I didn't recognize him. Somebody recognized him.
I'm just glad he didn't shout Cooter. while we're riding the Pedal Tavern around town.
Look, on the Vrabel staying in the bubble that he knows, I think Patricia is in the bubble that he knows. So I wouldn't dismiss Patricia as a possibility. Cooter's dropped off the face of the earth.
I haven't heard his name in a while. You're right. Good recall here by Mike Herndon of Broadway Sports. He says that Vrabel showed a lot of interest in 49ers linebacker coach D'Amico Ryans back in 2018. And the 49ers blocked that interview request. And they're due to the new rules and the policy across the NFL for minority coaches, they can no longer block the interview request.
D'Amico Ryans, a terrific guy when I covered him as a player.
If they make that request again. There is a name to keep an eye on. That's a great recall there. We go back to the phones. Before we go back to the phones, Matt Patricia. I cannot help but think that the overall feeling with him is what happened in Detroit. He's one of those former, it's weird. He's one of the former Patriots coaches that I no longer think about Patriots when I hear his name.
He's been sullied by what he did.
I think about how much the players hated playing for him. I can't get past that. And that definitely happened. I mean, they acted as though they won their division in the locker room.
They had mimosas.
Yeah. They were tired of him. They were out of from underneath Matt Patricia at that point.
But players love playing for Vrabel.
Yes.
And so if Vrabel brings in Patricia, I think he rehabilitates him very quickly.
And we didn't hear this. I didn't hear the same things. You know, it's not like Belichick's easy to play for.
No. But Vrabel's got a different culture than Belichick in terms
Agreed.
Of, you know, Belichick was doing all of the, you know, who was talking about the Eagles? Kelsey was talking about, oh, you must really hate playing for that, even if you win.
Yeah.
And Belichick had some snide remarks back when the moment came.
Yeah.
Maybe when they played in the regular season or something and the Patriots won. And he said, looked like they had fun out there to me.
But even when Logan was doing the show with us, he had nothing on or off air to say. He never had anything bad to say about Matt Patricia.
No, look, these guys leave there consistently. They do it time and time again. Virtually every one of them has done it. They leave there and they go and try to be Belichick,
But they don't try to adjust when it doesn't work or it's not received well.
They just do it because Belichick's never had to adjust, right? They're doing what they saw him do, and they presume it's going to work.
Yeah.
And they just don't have the capacity to change off of it. It's a foolish approach
that's failed time and time again. It's not every coach, though. Brian Flores is doing just fine as a defensive-minded coach in Miami.
There are some exceptions, but it's largely failed. Did it work? Did Mangini do it?
No. But they hate each other. I mean, that's a bad one. Mangini and Belichick hate each other. I would almost think Mangini would do the opposite of whatever Belichick did.
And I think Vrabel's smart enough, not that he coached under him, but he incorporates plenty of Belichick stuff.
Sure.
But he also goes opposite Belichick on plenty of stuff.
It's just it was just a weird approach that you take as a first-time head coach when you come in and you're the czar, you know?
Well,
when you haven't earned anything.
When he went after Mike Rothstein, who you guys know,
you saw
my escalator exchange with Mike Rothstein, the ESPN Detroit Lions reporter. When Matt Patricia went after Mike Rothstein about his slouching and why don't you sit up and get it together or whatever, I mean, if I was on that beat, it never would have positioned itself for that exchange. But God, would I have loved for somebody like Patricia
to say something like that? Yeah.
I mean, you got to stay on your ground with a guy like
Yes. We go next to James. James, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Yeah, the thing that I saw this season, I don't just watch the ball and what's going on with it. I watch the offensive and defensive lines play. I saw that the defensive line never developed. Jeffrey Simmons never got better. He's been good, but he didn't get better throughout the year. He didn't progress. I think, and I didn't see anybody else on the defensive line progress any. The secondary, you can kind of, you know, give a flyer to because, you know, you lose Adoree Jackson, you lose Christian Fulton. You can kind of see that they were kind of thin there. You know, when you lose your two of your three starters. But with the defensive line, it never got better. Was the Jarrell Casey trade a bad deal? Did we kind of make a mistake there? Maybe because Jarrell Casey, the pressure he put it on, hid a lot of the Titans' defensive issues over the years. It really just hid it because he was able to get to the quarterback so quickly. He was able to affect the line. He was causing too many double teams, and you just don't see that right now in the Titans' defensive line and their ability to affect the other team's play calls and their throwing in the passing game.
Stick with me here, James. If I asked you at the end of last season, given what you had seen of Simmons, hey, what if they gave up Casey and they relied on Simmons in that role, and then they moved some of their dollars outside and brought in Jadeveon Clowney? not knowing what you know now, but knowing what you knew then, would you have been willing to take a crack at that?
No, I would have kept Casey and Simmons and put them opposite each other on the defensive tackle and say, well, okay,
opposite each other at defensive tackle is actually next to each other. You're making it sound like there's a lot of space between.
Well, I know there's not a lot of space, but I'm just saying I put them together and then say, okay, you can double team both of those guys, but then, you know, I can put in a second tier kind of defensive end, and now I've got pressure on the quarterback still.
Well, they had plenty of second tier defensive ends. I don't know that any of them were getting any pressure anywhere. I mean, I think it's easy hindsight.
Well, it wasn't hindsight at the time, because I was saying it at the time that I don't think they should get rid of Jarrell Casey simply because Jeffrey Simmons didn't have enough. I didn't think he had enough time to develop under Jarrell Casey, learn some things about the NFL, learn some things about how to play defensive line in the NFL.
You learn those things from your coach. You learn those things from your coach. That's the job of the coach.
Well, they haven't.
Agreed.
He hasn't.
Agreed.
We don't disagree with the development of the rest of the line with you on that.
And they have insufficient supplementary players. What they were allowed to do was trade Jarrell Casey and acquire somebody better, frankly, than Jack Crawford or Larrell Murchison to be part of the line combination there, too. They failed in that. We haven't really discussed the supplementary defensive line play.
I mean, there were games where I mean, Simmons is one of the players that they're counting on being there game in and game out. Double teams for the best defensive lineman in the league happen every snap. And there were games this year where I didn't hear Simmons' name called all that much. You know, the fourth quarter and Mike's calling a play by tackle by Simmons. I think, or he's providing a pressure. I'm thinking, that's the first time I recall hearing his name all game. But there are other games where he's very disruptive.
Yeah, he's inconsistent
like a lot of the defense.
Yeah, very good run
player.
Good run player.
Yes.
Part of that short yardage thing, he,
of course,
and Evans and Daquan,
he's
Jones,
one of the
very good at that short yardage.
If you're building a framework of how you get back to what you were
he's
defensively, he's at the center of it. I mean, he's the core piece.
I mean, if you go through the core pieces, one of the other core pieces we're saying you probably have to cut for $10 million, Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
Malcolm Butler was a show-up-every-week guy.
But with Simmons and then the other one I would point to is Byard. Those are two you just have to count on being the game-in, game-out players as the core of your defense.
Hey, picking up on the D'Amico Ryans thought.
Yes.
Robert Saleh is going to get a head coaching job. D'Amico Ryans is going to be in line to be the defensive coordinator in San Francisco.
Yes. Or go with his
coach. Go with Saleh.
Yeah. Still.
Though he'd have more freedom to – he'd have more power under Shanahan because, Shanahan's offensive head coach. He'd have less power with Saleh, though he's probably tight there. He'd have less power with Vrabel, so to speak.
Coming up, Torrey Holt's going to join us at 12:15. Until then, we welcome more of your phone calls. Two lines available if you'd like to jump in. If you're on the line, rapid fire when we come back. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.